So I just read a fun fact, kind of a scary fact, but more than 12 Snickers bars are sold every second in the United States. That's wild. But yeah, no wonder we're so healthy. So anyway, I'm going to go back to the 90s on this episode, which is probably the last time I ate a Snickers bar. And I'm going to talk about a couple of friends, film school, a horrific relationship, and Jason Priestley.
You are my density. You are my density.
So quickly, I can't believe I'd never seen Terms of Endearment from 1983, directed by James L. Brooks, who also did the classic and amazing Broadcast News from 1987 with William Hurt, Holly Hunter, and my man Albert Brooks, who has a great scene where he actually goes on camera to do the news, and he just starts sweating profusely. He's just covered in sweat, and he's talking to Holly Hunter after, and he's like, you know, people were calling. And she was like, oh, they're calling to complain about your sweating? And he's like, no, they were worried I was having a heart attack. But anyway, Terms of Endearment is so pro. It's like well shot, well acted, well written. A great theme song from it. Oh, but it is sad as shit, this movie. Ooh. It's a great role by Jack Nicholson and Shirley MacLaine. Deborah Winger's great in it. Jeff Daniels, a young Jeff Daniels, as the somewhat dim-witted husband. His name is Flap Horton. Jack Nicholson is kind of a free-loving extra-astronaut who woos the somewhat uptight Shirley MacLaine. It's funny, in one of the quotes, he takes her to lunch, and he's like, you're just going to have to trust me about this one thing. You need a lot of drinks. And she says, to break the ice? And he says, to kill the bug that you have up your ass. Pretty great. Okay, let's go back to the mid-90s. I was in film school at Loyola Marymount, which was in Westchester, kind of near Marina Del Rey. I was an okay student. I mean, I got good grades and stuff, but I hadn't really developed, like, any confidence or, like, you know, my personality yet completely, though. So I wasn't, like, 100% myself. I think I applied to UCLA but didn't get in. But it was a pretty cool school, actually. It was pretty hands-on. You got to do a lot of stuff. I remember for one of our classes, I would think it was, like, a film theory class or something. But the director of the 1971 movie Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Mel Stewart, came in. He was just like, you know, a legendary figure. Seemed like a totally classy, cool guy. That movie always kind of freaked me out as a kid. I get kind of claustrophobic in the part where that Augustus Gloop falls into the chocolate and gets sucked up through the tube. Man, that was always traumatic. That and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang were a couple of, and Time Bandits were a couple movies that scared the shit out of me as a kid. And the other famous kind of shithead character from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was Veruca Salt, which was also the name of a fairly poppy rock band from Chicago. They kind of broke up eventually. The two lead singers kind of, I think, just didn't get along and some egos got in the way. But they have a kind of a cool song, Seether, which was from 1994, which is basically this time I'm talking about that I was in school. Anyway, here's a little bit of Seether.
Seether is neither loose nor tight. Seether is neither black nor white. I tried to keep her on a short leash. I tried to calm her down. I tried to ram her into the ground, yeah.
And I had a girlfriend, actually, during this film school period, or for at least the first half of it, and she had come down with me from Northern California. She was actually the girl that worked with me at the video store. I probably shouldn't have had her come with me. Our relationship was just cuckoo, toxic. I mean, yeah, we just were a bad mix. She was a nice girl, but yeah, and I haven't, you know, like, I've only had, like, three really bad relationships. I've had maybe four, maybe five, you know, really good ones. So I'm still batting a pretty good average. But the bad ones were pretty bad. And I just remember I would go down to the parking garage of this apartment during this period, and I would literally pray to God. I would be like, God, please get me out of this relationship. If I never have another girlfriend again, that's okay. Just get me out of this. This is destroying me. And so anyway, the relationship did end, and that deal with God kind of has panned out. I mean, not really. I've had girlfriends, but there's been a couple biblical droughts along the way. Okay, let's get back to school, which was a funny Rodney Dangerfield movie from 1986 with Rodney Dangerfield and Keith Gordon, directed by Alan Metter. And Keith Gordon actually acted in Brian De Palma's pretty interesting Dress to Kill from 1980 and the Stephen King adaptation Christine about the evil car from 1983, directed by the great John Carpenter. Keith Gordon actually started directing movies after that, after he was an actor. But anyway, Rodney Dangerfield plays a, you know, a rich guy who goes to school at the same time as his son. A couple of funny quotes. He's talking to Sally Kirkland, one of the teachers, about asking her out. And he's like, how about tomorrow night? And she says, I have class then, too. And he says, I'll tell you what, then. Why don't you call me sometime when you have no class? And she says, all right, maybe I will. And then another totally stupid line. She's asking him about, like, an assignment in class. And she asks Rodney Dangerfield, how would you characterize the Great Gatsby? And Rodney goes, he was great. Stupid stuff, but funny. Anyway, when I was at film school, I also worked at a video store. The owner kind of had a Danny DeVito vibe, kind of short. Actually looked more like the Penguin version of Danny DeVito. Wasn't the most attractive guy on the planet. But he was a nice guy. He was into movies, but he was kind of annoying. Whenever I would say, like, you know, when I'd come into work, I'd be like, hey, what's up? And he would go like, life. Which I always thought was so corny. But yeah, he would categorize the movies in this very personal kind of goofy categories. He would like have thrillomedies and copedies and just all these weird mixtures of words. So whatever, I like his spirit. And in film school, we actually had to cut on film, like actual film, believe it or not, on a goddamn moviola. Jesus, it was tough and laborious as hell. We started with the famous film assignment that everyone had to do in film school, at least back in the day. You had to edit a scene from the TV show Gunsmoke from the dailies. And in this little scene, Jack Klugman was the villain. That was kind of fun to do, actually. But, you know, it took a lot of time. And kind of weird, I went to the Pierce Brothers Cemetery that last week and I visited Los Angeles. And I was showing some people, some friends, like some of the different people there. And I saw that underneath Jack Klugman, who played Oscar Madison on the TV show The Odd Couple, was someone in the wall crypt, like below him, with the last name Unger. And Felix Unger was Tony Randall's character's name, which is totally bizarre. I mean, this Unger was buried there before Jack Klugman died. And I can't imagine Jack Klugman's family was like, oh, let's just pick this spot above Unger. That would be fun. So, yeah, totally kind of weird. The Odd Couple was a TV show, but it was originally a movie from 1968 directed by Gene Sachs. And yeah, it starred Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, who's also buried at Pierce Brothers. And I also took a bunch of film history classes. Like it was basically just watching movies and writing about them. It was like my dream. I had a Billy Wilder class where we saw like all of Billy Wilder's stuff on the big screen. And then I was obsessed with Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in the West from 1968. With Charles Bronson as the hero and Henry Fonda cast against type as the villain. It's a long movie, but man, it's great. And it's got the greatest soundtrack by Ennio Morricone. It's like, anyway, please look that up. But yeah, for my final kind of film assignment, I wrote like a comedy, which I mentioned before, actually. It was about like a schlub whose girlfriend leaves him because she's in love with Jason Priestley from the show Beverly Hills 90210. And in this little film, Jason Priestley has written an autobiography. And the guy kind of eventually goes to this book signing to kind of confront Jason Priestley. He sees his girlfriend there and it just goes badly. He never actually gets to Jason Priestley, but he does meet another girl there. So there's, you know, kind of a happy ending. And quickly, talking about like Jason Priestley and stuff, there's kind of this interesting weird little movie from 1997, Love and Death on Long Island. I saw it in the theater. It was John Hurt plays a widower who sees Jason Priestley in like a movie. He actually walks into like the wrong movie theater and the movie is starting and he just becomes infatuated with this Jason Priestley character. He eventually meets him. It gets kind of weird. It's kind of a charming, sad little movie. But yeah, there's a funny detail when John Hurt walks into the wrong movie. He actually walks into the Jason Priestley movie in the movie called Hot Pants College 2. And John Hurt just saying the title of that movie is like worth the price of admission for this goddamn movie. He's like, Hot Pants College 2. But yeah, in my script writing class, I was working on the script for this Jason Priestley movie. And the teacher was like, hey, you should try and get Jason Priestley in this. And so anyway, the teacher somehow arranged for me to be an observer on the Beverly Hills 90210 set for a couple days. I mean, it was fun as hell. I used to love the show. I mean, it was stupid as hell, but the set was kind of off Burbank Boulevard. And I remember at one point, you know, I had some free time, so I was just walking around and they weren't shooting at the Peach Pit, well, you know, during this show. And so I just walked around the Peach Pit set and kind of, you know, went into the little diner. It was a teeny little place, way smaller than you expect. You know, the sets are, you never know how big they're going to be or small. It's like they can really use that space intelligently. Anyway, Jason Priestley wasn't even on the set the 2 days I was there. But I did get to meet Ian Ziering, who played Steve. He seemed like kind of a cool guy. And I think recently, like in L.A., like, I don't know, somebody fucked with him and he like beat up a couple dudes or something. Anyway. And then Gabrielle Carteris, she was also there, who played Andrea. She did not seem cool. But anyway, the episode's director was this guy, Jack Bender, and I kind of got to hang out with him. He had directed Child's Play 3 from 1991, and he also directed the TV show adaptation of Stephen King's Mr. Mercedes, which was pretty good. But yeah, he was cool as hell. I mean, I hung out with him, and he talked to them and stuff, and, you know, he asked me about film school, and the crew was, like, you know, really pro. They just shot quick, no bullshit. And kind of amazing on this particular episode, I didn't get to meet Jason Priestley, but guest starring on it was actually the legendary comedian Milton Berle, who died in 2002. So I got to meet him, which was kind of a thrill. He played like a guy with Alzheimer's on the show in a retirement home. And Steve has to do community service there and they kind of become friends. Milton Berle was old as shit when I saw him, but he did have a legendary old school Hollywood look and vibe. Yeah, rest in peace, Milton Berle. And my grandpa was also, he was named Milton, so I always have had a sweet spot for the name Milton, which you don't hear much anymore. So anyway, I shot the film eventually at my last semester at school. And the film production teacher was, he was smart, but he was kind of a tyrant. And I had edited it together on film. It was maybe 7 minutes long. And he finally, you know, watched a rough cut with me and he's like, maybe try jump cuts because it's not working. And yeah, cutting on film is pretty taxing and you have to be so organized. I always want to say organized, which is a line from Taxi Driver. But anyway, I wouldn't like keep the trims, the little cuts you would make when I was making these jump cuts, and I just had them all in a bag. And so basically after I did the jump cuts, I basically couldn't put them back together. I was like, well, this is the way it's going to be. I didn't really like the jump cuts, but I had kind of just fucked myself. And like years later, when I was editing on like an Avid on a computer, I could have cut this, my little short movie, better on a computer in 30 minutes. No bullshit. And I remember at the screening, I think she was in one of the movies or she knew someone, was the really cute actress Mia Sara. She was famously in John Hughes's Ferris Bueller's Day Off from 1986. I know people love that movie. I like the first half, but then when it gets all serious and sad and shit, I'm like, ugh, fuck it. But I always dug the kind of forgotten 1985 Ridley Scott fantasy movie Legend with Tom Cruise and Tim Curry as the Lord of Darkness, but it's got unicorns and all kind of fantastical fucking weird shit. Totally one of a kind movie, kind of worth watching. It was a totally cool experiment. And speaking of Ferris, one of my favorite scenes is where Charlie Sheen plays this wastoid who's sitting next to Ferris Bueller's sister in the movie. She's played by Jennifer Grey, famously from Dirty Dancing. They're both in a police station. She hates her brother, and she kind of got picked up by the police because she was trying to, you know, get him in trouble. Charlie Sheen is staring at her, and he's like, "Drugs?" And then she says, "No, thank you. I'm straight." And he says, "I meant, are you here for drugs?" She looks at him, "Why are you here?" And he says, "Drugs." Anyway, she goes to tell him like how much she hates her brother. And he's just like, you know, you ought to spend a little more time dealing with yourself and a little less time worrying about what your brother does. That's just an opinion. And then she's like, "Why don't you keep your opinions to yourself?" And then he says, "There's somebody you should talk to." And she says, "If you say Ferris Bueller, you lose a testicle." And Charlie Sheen says, "Oh, you know him?" And it like cuts to her clenched fist. Totally funny scene. But during film school, I had a buddy from high school named Colin. He was actually at Cal State Long Beach. Great guy. He would come up to Westchester. We would go play pool and drink and just goof around. And he was kind of my salvation during this period where I was, you know, going out with the girl that was just a horrid relationship. I remember one time he showed up and I opened the door and he kind of had this weird beard. It was like almost like a neck goatee. It just was like located in a weird spot. It was too far down from the chin. It was just like bizarre. And I was just like, as soon as I saw him, I'm like, "What the hell is that?" And he was like, "Oh, does it look bad?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then he shaved. But it was just like something from an episode of Friends or something when I opened up that door and it's just like, "What the fuck is that?" And this buddy, Colin, it was funny. He would also sometimes like sing lyrics wrong. I was listening to a lot of Pixies and Frank Black at the time, and Colin would fuck up a few lyrics. One of the funny ones was from Frank Black's solo album from 1993. It was the song Los Angeles. It has the lyric, I met a man, he was a good man, sailing and shoring, right? So Colin would say, I met a man, he was a good man, selling insurance. One time I heard him, I was like, what the fuck are you saying? We just started laughing. And then another one, the song Alec Eiffel from the great album Trompe Le Monde. I've listened to Alec Eiffel and Motorway to Roswell like so many times over the last 20 years. Holy shit. Anyway, at the beginning of Alec Eiffel, they're singing this. Pioneer of aerodynamics, little Eiffel. And Colin sang, pioneer of aerodynamics, little light posts. But the end of this song, Alec Eiffel, also for the last 20 years, I've been singing it wrong. When I saw the lyrics for this, I was like, oh my God. And I can't unsing the lyrics that I've already made up for it. And my lyrics don't even make sense, like English-wise. Like at least Colin's were like correct grammar. Mine is just like complete bullshit. And the ending of that kind of goes like this. I see you beneath the archway of aerodynamics, oh, Alexander. I see you beneath the archway of aerodynamics, oh, Alexander. And I would sing, seeing the need be natural, I'm holding the town and somebody somewhere. I'm seeing the need be natural, I'm holding the town and somebody somewhere. Please listen to the song and sing my lyrics, and it kind of works. I mean, it makes no goddamn sense, but oh well. And this same Colin, who I will now refer to as C, to protect his anonymity, he used to snore a bit when he would sleep over. I would kind of throw pennies lightly at his face across the room, which would kind of wake him up momentarily without completely waking him up. But he would like, you know, kind of stop snoring for a bit, and then I would have time to try and sleep and then kind of repeat the process. You know, I'm a great friend, right? But we used to love going to this dive bar on Lincoln Boulevard, long ago closed, called Fireside. It was great. It had pool tables. It had some food, you know. And there was a recurring cast of characters, some cool like Irish and Scottish guys that we would always play pool with. And one guy who worked for that weird company, Herbalife, he always wore this little button that I'll never forget that said, lose weight now, ask me how. But slowly wrapping up here, I would be remiss if I failed to mention kind of a friend. I mean, I didn't know him well, but I during this period, there was like a Ralph's within like walking distance to my apartment. And that's where kind of I would shop. And this homeless guy named Bill would always or often be out front. You know, he was kind of a ravaged looking alcoholic, looked years beyond his age. Kind of a Chet Baker, Samuel Beckett look. One of his eyes was like injured or just kind of completely black or dead. But he was like the sweetest goddamn guy, even when drunk. And I would sit there and I would talk with him and, you know, we would talk about stuff and man, it would tear me up. I would always give him money or buy him something. And, you know, who knows if I didn't have a great mom or dad or made some serious fuck ups, it's like, shit, I could be homeless. You know, almost any of us could be. You never know what got a person there. I mean, yes, sometimes, you know, somebody was a jackass, but sometimes it's just a mental illness or bad luck or, you know, whatever mistakes. It's always tragic, though. And the fact that he was like so sweet was even more heartbreaking. I mean, it would be easy to be angry as shit as a homeless person. You know, I don't know if I could be nice, but someone who's like down on his luck and troubled and still is nice, that's just a rough one. I think I drove him to like somewhere at some point. Maybe it was a shelter. I can't recall. But eventually I stopped seeing him and I kind of, you know, I always kind of missed talking to him. I'm sure he's gone by now, but I hope his life improved a bit. We weren't like close friends, you know, but he made an impression on me, and I'll never forget him. And so, Bill, I hope you're in a better place, and I enjoyed our time together. And we'll wrap up with another quote, rather than having you hear me sing again. The people have spoken. And they said, stop singing. No, no one's spoken. Anyway, I read a good article about a basketball player named Ricky Rubio, who had some like mental health issues. I'm not a big basketball player. I'm not a big basketball watcher or player, although I am tall and I'm good at blocking. He recently retired, though, from for mental health issues. And anyway, the article was kind of about him. Sounded like a really good guy. Like he's all the other teammates really liked him. And he never got an NBA championship in his career. But he has a great little quote that I think applies to everyone, not just, you know, basketball players. And he says, that's my championship, I'll say. I'd rather be seen as a good person than a great player. At the end of the day, what people will remember is who you are and how you make them feel, not because you play good basketball or bad. Well said, sir. Yeah, it's like, you know, whatever accomplishments or you made this song or movie or you won a championship or something. It's like at the end of the day, no one gives a shit about that. It's like, do people enjoy being with you? Do you, you know, help people out or bring some joy to some people's lives or whatnot? It's like, anyway. So, yeah, I think that's it for this episode. Bye-bye.